Okay, thank you. I'm going to be talking to you today about some work that we're doing to try to get ages for red giant stars that have high-resolution spectroscopy. And I'd like to thank my collaborators, John Holtzman and Leo Girardi, and the whole Apogee team for their help on this. So we do a lot of work looking at galactic populations and sort of separating them by in abundant space and identifying different populations and looking at either sequences of stars or loci of stars. But ages can add a really important part to this. So first of all, they put an absolute time scale on this chemical evolution that we look at, which is really crucial. And also, when you add some age information, sometimes unexpected things pop out at you. So there's been a lot of studies getting ages of solar neighborhood stars, such as the Haywood sample that is shown here. And for the most part, and these are working with mostly subgiants, and so for the most part, it generally shows that the chemistry traces age as we expect, but sometimes we get some outlying stars in the age space that we didn't originally expect from just the abundant space. If we have really precise ages, like what's possible with astroseismology, we can also see these surprising stars. Some recent work from Martig et al. And Ciappini et al. Have used apogee spectra along with observations from Corot and Kepler, and have found these really young alpha-enhanced stars. So these bluer stars up here, and in Ciappini's plots, you see these blue stars highlighted right here. So these are pretty unexpected from our ideas of chemical evolution. And we see these both in the solar neighborhood with Kepler and throughout the disk with Corot. As was mentioned earlier, you can hear more details about this on Wednesday from Andrea Miglio's talk. Unfortunately, we don't have astroseismology for the majority of stars throughout the galaxy. So if we do have distance measurements along with this high-resolution spectroscopy, we can start to put some constraints on the ages from absolute magnitude. You can see from parsec isochrones that along the giant branch, the isochrones start to separate with age in V magnitude. So if we can use good distance measurements along with apogee spectra, we can start to separate age along the giant branch. We can also use that luminosity along with the high resolution spectroscopic parameters to get a mass estimate of those stars along the giant branch. Unfortunately, this mass estimate error is really limited by our error in surface gravity. Right now for apogee, that's about 0.15 decs. So to get an age for these stars, we use isochrone matching, and we use all the observable parameters that we have right now. So we use the effective temperature, the metallicity, and the surface gravity from apogee. We use the V magnitude from Hipparchos, and we use that mass that we calculated using the combined parameters. And the main real goal behind this is so that once Gaia distances are available, we can get age estimates for all of the apogee sample that has a Gaia distance available. We've tested this method already on a simulated sample of stars with apogee-like errors introduced. This technique so far has recovered the log G to a standard deviation of about 0.1. decks, the mass to within about 40%, and the age to within about 60%. So then we moved on and tested this sample on a local sample of stars from the solar neighborhood. These stars were selected to have accurate Hipparchos parallax measurements, and also selected to be giants, because those are the stars that we're really aiming at getting ages for. Then they were observed using the New Mexico State 1 meter telescope, for which we've developed a fiber link to the apogee spectrograph. And here you can see our HR diagram of this sample right now. So far, our results for this sample are comparing well with other studies, such as the Haywood sample. For our age metallicity relation, we get a really broad metallicity distribution at a given age, and then we start to see a downturn in the metallicity at an age of about 7 to 8 giga years. We also see that alpha and Rinch stars tend to be older, and that the youngest stars are in that metal-rich alpha poor clump. Since we have apogee spectra for these, apogee produces the individual elemental abundances for 15 different elements. Here you can see what we are starting to look at the mean age of as a function of individual element abundance for oxygen, magnesium, and calcium shown here. And these also are agreeing pretty well with recent work in the solar neighborhood, particularly Ramirez et al. In oxygen and the results from Gaia-ESO in the Bergeron paper with magnesium. So right now we're just sort of, the next big step is to get those distances from Gaia. We need a larger sample to statistically examine the detailed abundance variations with absolute time on a galactic scale. And we're really trying to develop this method for getting ages so that we can apply it to giant stars throughout the galaxy for the full apogee sample with Gaia distances. So until that time, we can try to grab an age for apogee stars at the same time as getting a distance. There are a lot of groups working on getting distances for apogee stars through isochrone matching, and it's possible to grab an age at the same time as you're getting the distance from matching to those isochrones. These ages are not going to be as good as if you have distance measurements already. As you can see, the separation with age in log G is not as good as it is with, say, V magnitude. So these ages are much cruder. But if you have a large sample like apogee, you can start to see some statistical trends in age. So that's what we did. We looked at the apogee sample in the solar neighborhood in alpha to FE space, where the color here represents age. At first, it looked really amazing. We were very excited about it. You can see that the high alpha stars are old, and there's a really cool sequence with age along this low alpha track. But unfortunately, this is totally unreliable for a couple of different reasons. First of all, there are systematic effects due to alpha abundance. From recent Vandenberg isochrones, you can see that with an alpha-enhanced star is going to be cooler than a solar abundance star. And so if you're inferring ages for an alpha-enhanced star from solar scaled solar isochrones, you're going to infer an older age for that star. Unfortunately, we sort of are expecting that the older stars are going to be alpha enhanced, and also the oldest isochrones have the smallest separation in age. So this alpha enhancement effect is really important to include when you're trying to infer an age. But fortunately, from the apogee data over here, at a single metallicity, you can see that the alpha-enhanced stars are, in fact, cooler. So this is encouraging, both from the viewpoint that the apogee abundances are on the right track, and also that the isochrones are agreeing. So the next step would be to include alpha-enhanced isochrones when trying to get ages. And this could also be affecting the local sample as well. Another systematic effect is that if we look here at stars of a single metallicity and a single alpha abundance, we would, the color here is age, and so we would expect that you would see a nice continuous distribution of age along the red giant branch, but we see weird patterns along here. And so this is probably indicating that the star's position, the star's age is being inferred from the star's position on the giant branch rather than an actual match to that isochrone of a given age. So therefore, we're putting a challenge forth to this conference and this workshop, and that is to use the high precision measurements that we have available to us to really calibrate the data to the models and vice versa, so we can really pin down ages much better. So in conclusion, we're moving towards a galactic sample with ages and abundances using Gaia and apogee data. Our challenges going forward will be to really make sure that we can match the isochrones and the data correctly, and that we include alpha enhancements. It's really important that we use our high precision astrophysics to calibrate both the data and the models. We have some tools available already to us, such as astroseismology and clusters. And if we are able to get ages for these stars, it will really let us make a lot of progress in galactic archaeology. But we need to use both high precision observations and high precision models to do that. Thank you.
Excuse me, did you use a technique to separate dwarfs and giants by yourself, or automatically you saw some available data?
For the local sample?
Yes, for, yeah.
It was just chosen with a color cut, and then we get apogee observations for them, so we use both the color cut and the apogee surface gravities.
Thank you.
Yeah, a grouchy comment. As someone who has spent a lifetime making observations, it drives me absolutely nuts to see people presenting diagrams of points as if observational errors didn't exist. I have a memory going back to the time of Edwardson et al. 93, where you see exactly the same relations between alpha elements and position in a galaxy as we saw also in a previous talk. Including the same selection effects and everything else, and there is this tendency of finding what you like a smooth distribution, etc. To find what you started out looking for, but observations are made to find out what the real world is like, and there are things like accretion of not only a primordial gas, but satellite galaxies, and the detailed spectroscopic detailed spectroscopic studies of dwarf galaxies and so on, which show effects that are very visible and not at all included in the models. So I've seen too many models. Fitting the same set of data over the past 25 or 30 years to believe any of them.
So Diane, you issued a challenge to the conference, and I'd like to actually get this more fleshed out. So are you going to provide spectra for people to, or are you going to provide sort of RAs and DECs? What are you going to provide to the conference so that we can actually meet this challenge? That's the first question. And second, what is being offered for meeting this challenge? Is there anything? I mean, what skin is in the game, Holtzman, really?
Well, so all this data was released as part of the Sloan DR12 data release, so it's all available. The spectra are there, the parameters are there.
But you have specific oddballs that are bothering you, right? Specific objects.
I guess now it becomes a comment to what Andres said, because he said whatever. I do think it is conceptually important to figure out when you want to use the information from your isochrones to diagnose your models and when you want to do this the other way around. And it wasn't quite clear to me. I thought in your talk you were mostly claiming that the data pointed towards inconsistencies in the models, or how do you avoid being circular there?
Well, so we're not sure. We did all this last week, so we're sort of. it could be that there are problems with the data. It could be that the problems are with the model. But really, what we want is to be able to directly compare them and make sure that at some level they are matching, so we can use them to infer the ages.